Welcome back to the Skiff Travel Podcast with Seth and Sarah. I am the aforementioned Sarah Copit, Skiff's editor-in-chief, joined, as always, by Skiff's head of research, Seth Borko. Say hello, Seth.
Hey, everybody. Great to see you, Sarah.
So today, fresh off the heels of the release of annual financial reports, we are discussing one of my favorite topics, executive compensation. People just love to talk about pay. Get this. In 2022, the Economic Policy Institute estimated that CEOs were paid 344 times as much as a typical worker, in contrast to 1965, when they were paid only 21 times as much. We're likely not going to settle any arguments today about so-called late-stage capitalism, but we are going to drill down into the most eye-watering figures being thrown around in the travel industry and beyond. And we're going to discuss how those compensation numbers relate to the performance of the companies in question. So, Seth, CEO pay. Let's talk about Brian Chesky first.
Probably the highest paid CEO in all of travel, although the numbers don't always show it. We just did a great story.
Dennis wrote a great story. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about like some of the intricacies of his pay package? Because it's really interesting.
So Brian Chesky, if you don't know him, the CEO and founder of Airbnb, in many ways revolutionized the travel industry. The company went public in late 2020 and immediately became the second most valuable public travel company in the world. It's still worth something over $90 billion on the market today.
Yeah.
And right before it went public, they gave Brian Chesky a brand new pay package. And it's a really interesting one. He was making like $150,000 a year. They cut his salary to $1 a year.
Okay.
And in exchange, they gave him about 12 million shares of stock in his soon-to-be public company.
I was going to say, what year was this?
This is late 2020, early 20. Okay. I don't remember the exact time.
But before the IPO.
It's right on the cusp of the IPO. On the eve of the IPO, they give him this new executive compensation plan. And it's 12 million shares of the new company, or it's old company, but now public company.
Right.
And they're set to vest in 10 equal blocks. So every year, he gets another 1.2 million shares if he can meet these increasingly higher and higher stock price goals. And the company goes public. It goes public from like $68, $70, immediately jumps to like $140 a share, something like that. Today it's at like $160 a share. So those 12 million shares are now worth a lot of money. And so all of a sudden it was always a big pay package, but it's become something like, we reported it's something like it could potentially be a multi-billion dollar pay package if he achieves, already it is today. And if he achieves all these targets, it's billions of dollars of compensation.
Yeah, closer to, I think, 3 billion is what we reported.
If he hits every single price target that they've set forth for him, it will be like a $3.6 billion pay package over 10 years. So that's only $360 million a year. So, very modest, right?
Yeah. So, the thing about Brian, though, is that he has said that he is going to, like many of the billionaires, although not all. But many of them, they have said they're going to give, they're going to give a lot of their money to charity. And like, I think that Chesky had said that he was also going to put some of it into a host endowment fund as well. So I'm going to see Brian next week.
You should ask him about that.
I am. I'm going to ask him about it. If he's listening right now, he gets a tip off.
Yeah, a little bit ahead. If he is an early listener to the Skiff podcast, then he gets a heads up as to how the conversation goes. That's a good deal for anyone listening.
Other CEOs take note.
That's right.
So what do you think about that? Like, I'm curious. Like, what are your thoughts about, I guess, Brian Chesky's pay package and how they did it? And I guess the broader question is, should there even be billionaires at all taken to the other extreme?
Well, I think those two things tie into it in the way I think about it. And, you can disagree with me. Our listeners can disagree with me. We can get some hate mail if we need it. But, there's this whole conversation about, should billionaires exist? Like, every billionaire is a policy failure. There's these slogans that people like. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. What's interesting about this pay package in particular is that it's not like they gave him $1 billion of cash.
Right.
And it's not like he inherited $1 billion from his, you know, rich uncle.
Yep.
It's his company. He built it. And the reason why he's getting $1 billion is because his company is worth $90 billion. And if he hits his target, his company is going to be worth $300 billion.
Yeah.
So it's you know, this pay package equates to something like 2 or 3% of the total value of the company paid out over 10 years. So in order for him to become a billionaire with the way that this compensation is structured, he has to make a lot of other people a lot of money as well. So I like that. This is the ultimate skin in the game pay compensation. $1 salary and only stock compensation. Not all companies do it that way.
Yeah, I do consider myself to be, you know, a good free market capitalist, but I'm one of those people that, I don't know, you know, you think about how much $1 billion actually is.
That's like, a lot of money.
It's $1,000 million?
Yeah, right?
$1,000 million, you know? And that's just $1 billion. Like when we're talking about billionaires, we're often talking about, you know, a magnitude of billions, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. I agree with you on the way that Chesky's pay package is structured. I want to live, you know, in a place where we encourage entrepreneurs and people to become insanely rich by making, you know, incredibly innovative and successful companies. I mean, it's like the American dream, right? But, you know, we'll talk about it a little later, but there is just something about, you know, the inequality between, you know, just most people out there going to work, trying to put their kids through college and, you know, trying to buy a house.
Yeah.
Then you've got this. So let's talk about some of the other travel CEOs. Like,
sure.
what, you know, I know Skiff Research has done a ton of work on this topic. Talk a little bit about like what you found about like our industry CEOs, Brian Chesky aside.
So, okay. Brian Chesky is 100% the exception. I just pulled some data on CEO compensation. So we track this, we call it like ST200, Skiff Travel 200.
Right.
It's 200 of the largest publicly traded companies. Now, I did throw out, I'll admit, I did some analysis of this. I threw out European and Asian companies because they report differently. And also, quite frankly, I mean, this ties into this conversation, the compensation structure in Europe, even for a similarly sized company, is much, much different. But if you look at, let's look at just at the US, the average, you know, travel CEO in the US makes like, let's call it $7 million in 2023. Mm-hmm. It's about what the pay was. A lot of that is stock, which is, I guess, a good thing.
Yeah.
The typical S&P 500 CEO, though, so other large cap U.S. companies, the pay is closer to $15 million on average in 2023. So, you know, and it's hard to say, right? Like, did travel perform worse than S&P? Actually, it did not that much worse. So, in a sense, you know, these travel CEOs are underpaid at only $7 million. But the other piece of it is that we can speak frankly, and it just goes back to your point about inequality. You know, entry-level travel industry jobs can be very, very low paying relative to like one. I don't have like whatever. Elon Musk, one of the highest paid CEOs.
Yeah.
What if he employs a bunch of engineers? Those guys get paid a lot of money. You know, some of these global hotel chains like Hilton, Chris Nassetta got a massive pay package. The average salary in the hotel industry is like $45,000 a year.
Yeah.
So even though travel CEOs, many of them are paid less than other industries, I also think that in some ways there's more disparity in the travel industry between CEO pay and worker pay. I don't have precise numbers in front of me, I guess, in terms of backing that up, but it's an interesting thing to think about.
The European model, we kind of all, when we think about Europe, there's like a, you know, a lot more of higher taxes. I don't know. Do I want to use the S word? Like, I don't know if you would call a lot of them socialist governments.
Socialism.
Socialism.
Yeah. Want to make sure I've got the right S word.
Yeah, exactly. Talking to two Americans here. But
Yeah, yeah, it's basically a communist dystopia over there in Europe, right?
I mean, have you seen Finland?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I think in my opinion, and I'm starting to get a little bit away from the numbers, but I think part of it has to do with stocks, with the equity market. The equity market in the U.S. is a lot bigger. There's more public companies in the U.S. And a lot of these, not like they get low salaries, but a lot of these eye-popping compensation numbers, a lot of them do come from the stock value of shares given to the CEO. So the actual cash salaries are, you know, a far more modest $1 million a year, and then the rest of it is stock. I think that's part of the difference as well.
It's funny. I was, just digging around on social media the other day. Have you seen, there was like a video, it talked about a Europeans, like in a joking way, the Europeans' idea of what an American does every day. And you know, it's very funny, but like sometime around 3:30 in the afternoon, you know, after eating popcorn for lunch and driving their truck and turning the air conditioning on and polishing their gun, you know, they have an idea that like changes the course of human history. And then they put down their computer and go eat some more popcorn and ride a horse or something like that. But like, it's true. When I talk to my, like, especially my British friends, you know, they always talk about, you know, oh, you Americans, you have this, like, it's like that very westward ho idea of optimism and ability to fail. And it's why we have all of these colossally successful companies, right?
It's true. Well, the joke is that we are like, everyone's just a temporarily displaced millionaire in the United States, right? Like I'm just waiting to be the CEO. But then some people do it, right? That's the thing, is that that spirit means that. Yeah. And I guess that comes down inherently to an inequality thing. Like I can't know the exact number, but if you look at every single person who's ever tried to start a business, the median pay, if you include every single one of those zeros and even negative numbers from all those people who lose their shirts, maybe it's a bit of a trade. But then that one person who hits big, it's almost like gambling, right? Like we're not going to call Airbnb random chance. It was absolutely a major success. But like for the one person who hits it, it's big. And I think that's also, by the way, the difference between a founder, someone like Brian Chesky, versus someone who's just an executive, someone who goes to work, you know, played the corporate game really well and got promoted, you know, CEO is the startup founder is very high risk, high reward. There's a different type of CEO who's like the corporate lifer who has, you know, just comes into the company, you know, whatever, you know, those kind of folks.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to take a break here. When we come back, I've been updating my billionaires index. There is one that refreshes live. We'll check in with that and we'll talk some more about executive pay in the travel industry. All right. Welcome back to the Skift Travel Podcast. I'm Sarah Copit with Seth Borko, as always. So let's jump into the airlines now. Let's talk about airline pay. What do you got, Seth?
Yeah, we do these stories every year looking at the pay. The one that is most interesting to me this year is Robert Isom. He's the new CEO of American Airlines. We did a story on it on Skift, and he got paid a very generous compensation package this year, something like $31 million. And that is a 550% raise from how much he got paid last year. And he was promoted to CEO in 2022. So he got promoted to CEO.
Right.
And they said, oh, great job. Year one of CEO. Here's a 500% raise, $31 million at American Airlines, one of the highest paid travel executives. And what's interesting about that, and in general, is that why did he get that huge raise? And it's because the government capped CEO, this comes back to this conversation, the government capped CEO pay at the airlines during COVID. If you took CARES Act money, which was the bailout money, basically, you couldn't pay your CEO more than whatever the number, I'm not a lawyer, whatever the number was. Isom got promoted during that window. The window expired in 2023. And so they gave him an $11 million catch-up bonus just to say, hey, sorry, you picked a bad time to get promoted to CEO. Sorry you missed out. Here's $11 million bucks. You're not going to get it again, but you know, Enjoy. God bless. You know, I mean, it's a lot of money. Did you get a catch up bonus anytime you got hit by any bad time?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So it's an interesting piece happening there, and it's upset some airline employees too.
Well, yeah, there's strikes going on. You know.
There's a lot of labor contracts being negotiated in that space. There was some picketing, some striking. And Robert Isom is not a Brian Chesky. He's a smart CEO. And I'm not trying to insult him to his face on this pot, or hopefully to his ears if he's listening, right?
But exactly. But
he's not a founder. He's not a startup founder. He didn't invent. He didn't found American Airlines. He got promoted to CEO, got a lot of money at a time when people are like, hold on, that's a 500% raise is a big, even if you back out that bonus, it's a very big number.
Yeah. So, you know, it was kind of interesting though, like taking some of the airlines and like the really, really top CEO compensation off the table, the travel industry kind of has lower CEO salaries than maybe the typical Fortune 500 CEO. I mean, we've been looking at a lot of the statements that are coming out right now. It's kind of like pay season for those of us who like to delve into such thing. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of stark. It's interesting that we are in an industry that has maybe lower paid CEOs.
Yeah, I mean, do you have any guesses as to, I mean, do you have a reason for why you think that is? Or I could brainstorm a little bit, but what do you?
Yeah, when you look at the, you know, the highest paid CEOs, right? They're, I mean, it's just not, it's in these kind of like super innovative, you know, it's in tech, it's in a lot of these.
Microchips, kind of, things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like where you're on the hockey stick of innovation and, you know, you're like riding it up, where I think the travel industry is a bit, even though we like to talk a lot about the innovation that we do have within the space. And, you know, Brian Chesky is a great example of something where there really was that innovation. He started an industry that didn't exist before he started it. Right.
Yep.
And so you can say that's one of the reasons why he has this extraordinarily large pay package in stock in the company that he founded, in the industry that he started. So it's kind of hard to begrudge that, right? But you know, but for hotels and airlines, these are old, I would say older industries, more mature industries, I think is kind of how the
Yeah. By the way, it's kind of interesting. I was looking at Isom's pay package for this podcast. So we got that $31 million, about $11 million in catch up, you know, just, you know, a little bit of play money. The rest of it is, well, some of it's base, some of it's just long-term stock stuff. I think that's part of it, by the way, is that if you get paid a lot in stock and you're Google and your stock does really well, your CEO gets paid a lot. If you're an airline and you got a business every 10 years, your stock doesn't tend to do as well. Right. But I looked at this performance thing that, you know, so this is an interesting philosophy, kind of philosophical difference. Chesky is just stock. I don't really care how the company does. If the stock does well, you do well. And we'll assume if the stock's doing well, that the company's doing well.
Right.
Isom and the airline CEOs, and even I looked at Chris Nassetta as well, the hotel CEOs, they have specific operational targets. So Robert Isom gets paid 60% on net income, his bonuses, 60% net income, 30% actual operation, so that on-time performance, they measure if the planes take off on time and if they get to where they're supposed to go. And he gets paid 10% on DEI initiatives if he succeeds at hitting DEI goals. So Chesky has, we're talking about Chesky, he has none of that. Isom, his goal is like, oh, if your planes take off on time, then you get paid more. If you recruit more, you know, people of color or women, then you get paid more. And same thing. It reveals some interesting priorities where the tech startup guys, the priority is stock price. Maybe for the airlines, the priority is on-time performance. Nassetta, he gets paid on RevPAR, so hotel revenue, and he gets paid on net unit growth. So he needs to add a lot of Hilton chain hotels. So it's interesting to see how each of these different companies in each of these different sectors, their CEO pay kind of sets the bar for what they're going to try and do. So you better believe Americans can be focused on performance. Hilton's gonna be, you know, and we're seeing Hilton, by the way, add a ton of new brands. it's not a coincidence that that's what Nassetta gets paid on.
Well, we all know, you know, it's like, how do you, I mean, this is like across all jobs. How do you incentivize workers? The CEO, yeah, after all, is a worker. You know, you that's give right. them goals and you compensate them if they hit those goals, right? So I think, I mean, you can look at the CEO pay package and try to figure out what the priorities are for that company, right?
Yeah, you can. I think maybe the frustration is when they don't hit those goals, it feels like the CEOs still get paid, though. That's yeah. perhaps the frustration. It's also the time frame. American Airlines is going to hit its goal this year. They yeah. certainly missed their goals in 2020. How do you weigh that? And there's no one's fault, but right. it was no one's fault. But still, the flight attendants and the pilots got fired or laid off or furloughed through no one's yeah. fault. Yeah. So it's an interesting, yeah. I don't know.
And then there's like the issue of the golden parachute, which.
Oh, yeah, totally. You get paid, just to get fired.
Yeah, exactly. So and a lot of money. But, you know, I kind of, to me, the golden parachute makes sense. I mean, wait, you've got.
Explain what a golden parachute is for our listener, Sarah. They don't yeah. know.
So I like to think of it as. You're a CEO of a publicly traded company.
Yeah.
You work for the shareholders, right? Correct. Sometimes, especially if there's maybe a merger or, you know, on the table, somebody wants to buy your company. Guess what? If you sell that company, you're going to be out of a job.
Yeah.
Most likely. But most it likely. Might be in the best interest of the shareholders. So the CEO works for the shareholders and it wants to give the CEO the incentive to maybe do something that's not if it's not necessarily in their personal best interest, but it's in the best interest of the shareholders, they want to reward them mm-hmm. for taking that action. And so that's what's called the golden parachute, meaning that it's in a situation where the executive works in the best interest of the company, but not necessarily in their own personal best interest. So when they get fired or let go or go off and retire, they get
spend
to...
Time, when they spend time with friends, more time with family to focus.
Yeah, more time with their family. Yeah, they get to, you know, leap out of the airplane with their golden parachute and their bags of money onto the beach. So, so a lot of people, I feel like the golden parachute sometimes gets a bad rap in the press because
yeah.
I feel like we want to incentivize those CEOs to really do what's in the best interest of the shareholders. I think where you get caught up is just the kind of eye-watering
numbers of it.
Numbers that are attached to those.
Yeah, I think again, it comes back to like the average worker being like, well, if I get fired, I don't get a golden. But although you do get a severance. And if there are certain scenarios where if you are winding down a division, they do, in some cases, do actual pay, you know, line workers. Hey, if you can, we know this division is shutting down, but if you can hit these goals, you can get an extra incentive bonus. But I think, it's, you know, one person spoils it for everyone, right? Like a good golden parachute, like, well, on the top of the compensation list, like Twitter, right? Like you want the former CEO of Twitter to be negotiating as hard as possible against Elon Musk, even though Elon's first order of business is going to be to fire the guy, right? So
as he did immediately,
and then sued him, for his golden. But
yes, that's like a whole month's worth of podcasts just going over what happened over at Twitter, unfortunately, not in the travel industry.
Then you get the bad guys, right? You get one person who spoils it for everyone. The other S word, I don't know if I'll have to curse, but a not so nice CEO who gets fired. And then it just feels like he's walking away with the company's money. Yeah. And so I think the key to all of these things, and I guess maybe even with like the billionaire conversation for me, it's like, the specifics matter. Like they really do, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, we did kind of talk about it at the top, but do you think there should be billionaires? Do you think billionaires should be allowed to exist in our society?
Yeah. I don't see what the difference between a 999 millionaire and a billionaire, so to speak. Like, I think if you
Yeah.
I don't see an arbitrary cap, right? Like, I think if you make money and you build the real way people become billionaires, generally speaking, is by building businesses.
Yeah.
It's generally equity. If you can build great businesses that make you lots of money, I don't see the societal harm in that. I think I don't think that necessarily causes harm either. That's my opinion. Do you agree? I mean, you don't agree, or you do?
You know, I mean, I'm kind of with you with the, like, it all depends.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of with Europe a little bit. Like, I mean, I want to have my cake and eat it too, right? Like, I want to live in a society that encourages innovation and business building and everything that we do so well here in the United States, but at the same time kind of takes care of the little guy a little bit more.
Well, I don't necessarily see those things as at odds. Like, I think that a lot of the critique against political pushback against billionaires is that it's about the inequality. And there's two pieces to that. And it's like, well, this person's here, you know, for our audio listeners, really high, and for you know, another person's really low, and it's the distance between them. I don't see why it's interesting that we say let's cap salaries and let's ban billionaires instead of there should be no, you know, everyone should make at least whatever you should raise.
Yeah.
You should raise the floor.
Universal income. You could.
Universal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a false dichotomy.
Yeah. That's what I would say. That's what I would say. It's a false dichotomy. And I also think a lot of it, again, it comes down to equity. Like, at the very top, you started with that stat about the changes in pay how that ratio has evolved over time. We've become more unequal. I'm curious how much of that is because of how much bigger stock markets we have now versus in the past. And I'm not sure that's a bad thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there's also tax policy. I mean,
surprise. Did we say travel podcast? We meant tax policy podcast. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's a huge, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a huge piece of it. Like, why can't you make as much money as you want, but it's up to the government to, we can talk. There's a huge amount to this. Yeah. In terms of how the government taxes companies, individuals, that sort of stuff.
So listeners, tell us what you think. Send us an email. I'm at sek@skift.com. Seth is at sb. sb@skift.com. What do you think? Do you think there should be able to be billionaires? Do you think travel CEOs make too much money? Do you think we have bad tax policy? Whatever it is, drop us a line. Tell us what you think. Any last words, Seth, for this week's episode?
I'm very much looking forward to the compensate, you know, our bonus policy tied to the performance of this podcast, and hopefully this is the next $1 billion podcast. I think we're on our way.
I think we're on our way. There you go, Rafet.
Listen up, Rafet. Yeah, that's
listen
right.
Up. Yep. All right, Seth. Thank you so much, listeners.
Always
thank
a pleasure,
you so much
Sarah.
For joining in. We will see you next week, where we are going to talk about sleep tourism and the rise in Gen Z's latest flex coming to a hotel near you.